church prove that I'm not?
Do you believe in God, miss?
Yes, he smiled.
I have prayed for God to send us someone to help destroy the mad creature that rules us. I believe that person may be you, miss.
I shook my head. I'm no one's savior. That job belongs to the man hanging on the cross over there.
Don't you believe that we can all be instruments of God's will?
He said. I believe that God calls us to do his will, but free will means we can say no.
Saying no did not work out so well for Jonah,
he said, smiling that gentle smile of his. I don't think there's a lot of whales in Dublin, I said. He smiled wider.
We are a seaport, miss. You would be surprised what swims in the waters here.
I smiled, realizing that I'd treated him as if he didn't turn into a seal part of the time. I'm Anita Blake. What's your name?
Moran.
Well, Moran, are you ready to go outside and talk to Damien?
Not yet. I need to know if it's true that you freed Raphael and his were-rats from the master of St. Louis who had enslaved them.
I licked my lips and thought about what to say, because I had freed the were-rats by killing the old master of St. Louis. I hadn't had a warrant of execution for her, but I'd killed her to keep her from enslaving me like the were-rats. I didn't regret killing her, but I didn't want to confess to murder to a stranger either. I don't know you well enough to answer certain questions.
Can you free us, Anita Blake, like you did the were-rats?
I might be able to free individual Rowan, but to free all of you would mean your mistress would have to be dead. He nodded very solemnly.
Yes, that would be the only way.
We sat there and stared at each other. Why does everyone in Ireland think that I'll just kill people here?
Perhaps your reputation precedes you,
Slane said, peering around Moran. I frowned at him. He shrugged and leaned back so I couldn't see him around the other man. Would you be willing to tell the police what she's done to you and your people? Would you be able to help me prove her crimes to the police? I asked.
There's no death penalty in Ireland, Moran said.
So I keep being told, I said. We looked at each other for another long moment. I'm not an assassin, I said.
Of course not,
he said, but he looked at me with Riley's eyes and there was a silent demand in them. Help us. Save us. Kill the monster for us.
Will you help us, Miss Blake?
It's Marshall Blake. I have a badge. I'm a police officer. I cannot assassinate someone for you.
She is evil, Marshall Blake.
I understand that, but it doesn't change the fact that Ireland doesn't have a death penalty, and if it did, you'd need a trial to get to it.
We cannot afford the time a trial would take, Marshall Blake. You know that for something like Milady, you either kill it or you leave it alone. You do not try and put it on trial.
I'm not arguing with your reasoning.
But you will not help us.
I can't agree to assassinate her for you. I'm sorry, truly sorry, but I can't tell you, yes, I'll do it, because if I said that, you might count on it. You might make plans based on her being dead.
We would.
And if she didn't get dead, then those plans would get you killed. I won't be responsible for that.
I am told that if you slay the animal to call of a master vampire, that their death can drag the vampire down to true death at last. Is that true, Marshall?
It can be, I said, and I didn't like where this conversation was going.
I thought that the death of their animal or their human servant was a guarantee of their destruction.
Most of the time, the death of one causes the death of the other, but I've known vampires powerful enough that it didn't work that way.
You give me no hope, Marshall Blake.
I thought you were going to give us some hope about Riley and his girlfriend, I said.
If someone told you that, then I truly am sorry, for I have no hope to offer for Riley and his lady. He was young and foolish, but a good boy.
He seemed like a nice person, I said.
He was.
I didn't like that he used the past tense. Do you know where Riley and his lady friend are?
I do not.
Do you know what happened to them?
Not precisely, but he will be tortured to death. It is the penalty for disloyalty. Or sometimes it is the penalty for catching her attention. She has always been unstable, but the last 2 years she has become much worse.
The timing was after we'd killed the Mother of All Darkness. Was this our fault? My fault? I'm sorry, Moran, truly.
I believe you, Marshal Blake. If you had not been able to enter the church, then I would not have helped you. I did one deal with the devil centuries ago. I thought it would keep my people safe, but I was wrong.
Kazim leaned into us from the pew behind.
Is Moran your real name? One of them? What is the name that most know you by?
Kazim said.
Rourke,
he said. Kazim's gun was suddenly pointed at Rourke's head.
If you move, I will kill you,
he said in a low, careful voice. Nikki had grabbed me and was moving me backward away from the man. Slane said,
I was told he was just one of Rourke's seals. I did not know he was Rourke himself.
We will discuss your potential treachery later,
Kazim said. Who is this guy? I asked.
He's Her Moiety Bet, and the King of the Rowans,
Jake said as he moved into the pew we'd just left.
Fuck, I said.
Do not curse in the church, Marshal, Rourke said.
Why did you want this meeting?
Jake asked.
Inside the church, she cannot see into my heart and mind. I had to arrange the meeting as she ordered, but I have carefully kept my mind blank of the details. I told her I was going to church to pray here, so she would not be alarmed when I vanished from her mind. I also knew it would prevent Damien from recognizing me too soon.
What do you want, Rourke?
Kazim asked.
I want Milady to die, and my people to be free.
What are you supposed to be setting us up for? What does the wicked bitch want to happen here today? I asked.
She wants Damien back, and she would like your moiety bet at her mercy. God forgive me, she would like all your pretty men at her mercy.
I just dropped the shields that were keeping out Damien and Nathaniel, and Dev and Domino and Ethan. I just let them know what I knew. If Damien hadn't been with them, they could have come into the church to use it as sanctuary. But the vampire couldn't enter it, and we couldn't leave him alone. Damn it!
If anyone attacks our people outside this church, I will kill you,
Kazim said.
But don't you understand? That is exactly what I want you to do,
Rourke said. What are you saying? I said.
I believe in God, Marshal Blake. I cannot take my own life, but if I am killed, then it may drag her down to death with me.
Your death might just kill her human servant and not her. She might sacrifice the servant to save herself, I said.
But if she is bereft of both her animal and her servant, then she will be far less powerful, true?
I didn't know what to say because he was right, but it wasn't a guarantee. It would hurt her power base, but maybe not enough to free all your people.
If she is no longer my master, then she can no longer draw on all the other Rowan through me. She will have to wait for my people to elect a new king, and that will take enough time for Damien to lead you to her stronghold and help you kill her.
Jake said,
If someone is killed inside a church, it ceases to be consecrated ground until the rituals are performed again. But I will already be dead, and she will be weakened.
I did free Raphael and his were-rats. I freed them by killing the old master of the city that could call rats. Once she was dead, they were free.
All I want is for my people to be free of the monster that I let into our peaceable kingdom,
Rourke said.
Are there other Rowan waiting outside to attack us?
Jake asked.
There are, but they are waiting for me to signal them.
I thought you said the signal was you leaving the church, I said.
That is for attacking you. She wants to capture you, too, didn't I mention that?
No, you left that part out. I wanted Nathaniel in the church with me, but if he came inside, that might alert the waiting bad guys.
Why does she want Anita?
Nikki asked.
She wants to kill you as you killed the mother of all darkness, so she can drink the power inside you, as you drank the mother.
So she needs me alive to kill me in person, I said.
Yes, but she wants Damien back to be her slave again, and she wants to use those you love to make you afraid. She will feast on your fear, Marshal.
How many people are hiding out there waiting to attack us? I asked.
Enough that you should call Morgerda now while you can,
he said, and he was so calm. He shouldn't have been this calm. I didn't argue with him. Edward answered on the second ring.
Anita, I still haven't convinced everyone here to include you completely.
It doesn't matter, I said, and I told him what was happening.
We'll be there in 15 minutes, maybe less.
He didn't even ask any questions before he hung up.
Kill me, Anita. Kill me, and maybe you will kill her, too.
Maybe no one has to die today,
Kazim said.
I'm afraid that someone will die today. And I've decided it will be me,
Rourke said in that strangely peaceful voice.
Anita has inherited the mother's ability to cut servants and animals to call free of their masters.
That is not possible. You are lying to trick me,
Nikki said.
Can the seal people smell a lie like a were-animal can?
We can tell if someone is afraid or nervous, but that does not make them liars.
I give you my word of honor that Anita has broken the bonds of animals to call from their vampire masters without killing either of them,
Kazim said.
Your word of honor? Rourke made it a question.
Yes,
Kazim said.
Jake said,
Anita could try to break you free of your mistress. No one need die here today.
It is too late, for once I fail her today, she will torture those I love, because to torture me harms her.
Is her human servant like you? Does he want her dead? I asked.
No, he loves her. He enjoys what they do together, and what they do to others.
Then maybe you can help us trap him, too. If we kill both of you together, then her chances of survival are much lower than if we just kill you today, I said.
She will know what I have done. I cannot keep her out of my memories.
If you're trying to shield from her, can you?
For a time.
But only from a distance. If she is before me, then I am weak. If she touches me with her pale hands, then I cannot keep any secrets from her.
What if we arrest you? I asked.
What are you thinking, Anita?
Jake asked. What if we arrest him on assault or attempted murder, something, and put him in a cell? What if we keep him away from her and it's not his fault?
You are only delaying the inevitable, Marshal. Who would she send to break you out of jail?
Jake asked.
You think she would send her servant, that she would send Keegan?
Would she?
Jake asked.
She might. She just might.
Let us take you into custody, Rourke, I said. Let's try to keep everyone alive for a little bit longer.
If I agree to this, I need your word, all your words of honor. What do you need us to swear to?
Jake asked.
That if Keegan and I are in one place at one time, you will kill us both to kill her.
Can I try breaking you free of her power before we put a bullet in your brain? I asked.
I am not eager to die, Marshal, so if you wish to try such magic on me, I give you permission. I pray that it works, but if it does not work, then I want your word that you will kill me before you let me go back to her.
Kazim and Jake gave their words without hesitation. I think Nikki only hesitated because he could feel how conflicted I was about it, but in the end he gave his. And in the very end, as we heard sirens in the distance coming closer, I promised Rourke that if we couldn't figure out another way, I'd kill him. Chapter 57. The Irish police were happy to put Rourke in a cell. They were thrilled that I hadn't shot him. There was one drawback to not shooting him or not trying to break him free of the wicked bitch while he was still inside the church. Once he was outside of consecrated ground, she could contact him again, just like I'd been able to contact Jean-Claude and Richard all the way in St. Louis. So as the police escorted him to the truck that would take him to jail, he started to struggle. I don't know if he was struggling because she controlled him, or if it was to make sure any Rowan in the area reported that he had tried to escape, but one of the officers escorting him went flying into one of the police cars. The other police dogpiled him, or tried to, but he kept his feet and kept moving forward as if he just planned on walking down the street and away. Donnie, Brennan, Edward, and Nolan jumped on the pile, and their weight made Rourke stagger, but he didn't go down. Edward did something with his right hand, and Rourke's right leg collapsed, but he got back up. Tough motherfucker.
May I aid them?
Kazim asked.
Yes,
Jake said.
I will stay with our principals, but we must have the Rowan in a cell before full dark.
I realized that he meant me and Nathaniel, and maybe Damien, and he was right about the timing. The sky was growing dim. It was dusk. Kazim joined the crowd trying to control Rourke, and it was enough to swing the difference. Edward and Nolan would have gotten it eventually, but with Kazim helping them and the police, they managed to get the prisoner in the transport. The officer who had been flung into the car was sitting beside it with another officer giving him first aid. I could hear an ambulance in the distance, which meant he was hurt even worse than I'd thought. Rourke wasn't as strong as Magda, so the cells at Nolan's headquarters might actually hold him. The truck went screeching off down the road with the prisoner in it. Edward came back up the steps with Kazim a little behind him. Nolan was talking to one of the cops he seemed to know personally.
What did you tell them to get them to drive like that?
Ethan asked.
That he'd get even stronger once night fell.
That may be true, I said.
Either way, we want him in a cell before the vampires are up for the night,
Edward said. He looked at Damien, who was standing beside me.
Can she who made you walk around during the day?
Yes.
Lucky she's not here in Dublin, then,
he said. You have no idea how lucky, Damien said. Nolan came up the steps scowling so hard, the lines in his forehead looked like they'd been cut in with fresh knives.
What's wrong?
Edward asked. They won't let us have Rourke. They're taking him to regular lockup. You don't have an extra cell anyway, I said. I guess we don't, thanks to your werelion. Magda did exactly what you asked her to do. It's not her fault that your cell couldn't hold up. Nolan nodded, gave a small laugh, and said, Fair. My people aren't even as strong as the Rowan, but neither of us is as strong as your lioness. The combination of strength and her training made a joke out of all our preparations. Dev patted his shoulder.
There, there, it wasn't a joke. It just wasn't as useful as you'd hoped.
Night fell, and it was like something inside me that had been closed tight all day opened. I took in a deep breath of the rain-damp air. My phone rang, and it was Magda.
The new vampires have risen here, she said. They were completely out of their minds until they took blood, but then they seemed very calm and much more sensible than most new vampires that I've seen over the centuries.
That's good, right?
It is, though Nolan's people did not like having to donate blood. Giacomo and I were there to hold them and make sure the first feeding was controlled. Otherwise, they would have torn open their victims in search of blood.
Are they coherent enough to answer questions? I asked.
I believe so. Giacomo is talking to them now with some of Nolan's people helping guard the little vampires. The daughter and mother are asking about the rest of the family. Did they rise as vampires too?
Oh, shit, I said softly but with real feeling. I'll call you back. I yelled for Nolan.
Who's watching the vampire victims from earlier today?
They're at the hospital, he said.
What hospital?
What's wrong?
Edward asked. The others woke Savage until they'd fed. Where are the rest of their families? Nolan cursed under his breath and was already on his cell phone and moving toward the cars. We all divided up between the two cars, but I kept Nathaniel and Damien with me, though maybe putting all three of us in one car wasn't my best idea, not if the wicked bitch wanted to take all of us. But the thought of being separated from them, especially Nathaniel, made my throat tight. I still remember all the panic I hadn't let myself feel when Rourke told us that the plan was to kidnap him, because the bitch wanted all my pretty men, but especially Nathaniel. Good idea, bad idea, I kept him with me, and Damien stayed with both of us. We weren't alone by any means, but it was still like triple baiting one car. I tried not to think of it that way as Donnie kicked the van into high gear and screeched out after Nolan's car. I prayed that we'd get there before any of them injured or killed someone at the hospital. Magda had said that once they fed, the Irish vampires were lucid. How terrible would it be to wake up to yourself covered in someone else's blood, maybe sitting beside the body? I prayed not just to get there in time to save the victims, but to save the new vampires from truly becoming monsters. Chapter 58. By the time we got to the hospital, it was all over but the crying. I'd executed more vampires than anyone else, and killed more than I could actually keep track of some days, but I'd never had to sit across a table from one who was crying hysterically because she was covered in her victim's blood. If I hadn't seen the delicate fangs as the grandmother wailed her distress, I wouldn't have known she wasn't human. The newly dead either looked almost alive and became less human as time went on, or they looked more inhuman at the beginning of their existence and learned how to be more human as time went on. It all depended on the bloodline they descended from. Whatever vampire was creating these was unlike any bloodline I'd ever seen. Except for the hospital gown covered in fresh blood and the fact that her hands were restrained behind her, Mrs. Edna Brady looked like what she had been, a 70-something grandmother who had been a regular churchgoer and the matriarch of a loving family. She managed to wipe most of the blood off her face before she'd been restrained. There was one smear in her short white hair that nothing but a shower was going to get rid of. I knew that from experience. Once you got blood in your hair. I looked at her and didn't know where to start. I hunted vampires. I didn't hold their hands and explain to them how to be the best bloodsucker they could be. Lucky for both of us, Damien and Jake were with me.
Edna, Damien said in a soothing voice. Edna,
Can you hear me?
She continued to wail, and I mean wail. Terms like crying and hysterics didn't cover it. Edward and Nolan were dealing with Edna's son, who had also risen as a vampire. Kazim was helping them out. The father had been utterly calm. In fact, he didn't remember how he got so much blood on him or why he was in the hospital. Amnesia for the first few nights is a blessing, apparently, because we were staring at the impact of remembering everything. Nathaniel was in the hallway outside the room they'd given us. Dev and Nikki were permanently attached to him by my orders. Ethan and Domino, along with Donnie, had gone to the hotel to pick up Fortune and Echo. Echo would go in and try to talk vampire to vampire with the male vamp Edward and Nolan were trying to question. I was so ready to trade vampires with Edward. I was sympathetic, but I just simply didn't know what to do with Edna Brady. I don't know if she couldn't hear us or if she just didn't care. Damien had been gentle, patient, and charming, and nothing had stopped the awful screaming or taken one shade of panic out of her eyes. I was starting to get a headache just from the noise. I finally screamed her name back at her. At first, I didn't think she heard me, but her eyes started to focus as if she finally saw us and the room we were in, rather than being trapped in that moment when she'd come to herself, cradling the conscious body of her first victim.
Edna! Edna! Edna!
I screamed at her, and the wailing slowed. She blinked and looked at us again. She was in there, behind all the noise and terror. She was still in there. That was good, I thought.
Edna, can you hear me?
She blinked at me. She looked scared and confused, but at least she stopped wailing. Damien tried.
Edna, can you hear us?
Nod if you can hear us, I asked, and she nodded. Yay! Progress.
Do you know where you are, Edna?
Hospital,
she said in a voice that sounded raw from screaming.
That's good, Edna, Damien said. Do you remember why you're in the hospital?
She seemed to think really seriously and finally said,
My granddaughter disappeared. She came home. She wasn't dead.
I let that whole definition of life and death go for now. Something like that, yes.
Voices, shining eyes. They promised me something. They promised me. I looked in the mirror, and I looked the same. I thought I'd be young again, but I looked just the same. It didn't work the way they said it would.
What was supposed to happen, Edna? Damien asked.
Vampires are young and beautiful. I thought I would be 20 again, or 30. But there was a mirror in my room, and I looked as old as ever. I hadn't changed, and then a doctor came in happy that I was awakened.
Horror filled her eyes up one memory at a time.
Oh my God, I tore open her arm. I drank her blood.
She started to retch as if she was going to throw up. It's okay, Edna, it's okay, I said, though that was a lie. Such a lie.
Is the doctor all right?
She's in surgery, I said.
Did I tear her arm almost off? I wouldn't do that. I would never hurt someone like that, but I remember the blood and voices promising me I'd be young again.
I'm sorry, Edna, Damien said. She stared at him.
You're young and beautiful. You both are. That's the way it's supposed to be. That's why you give up everything, to be young forever.
I started to explain to her that vampires are the age they die at forever, that they don't grow older, but they don't become younger either. But Damien stopped me from explaining it to her. He whispered,
Later. Give her some time.
Where's Frankie?
Your son?
My husband! Where's Frankie?
I looked at Damien because Frankie hadn't made it. He'd had a bad heart for years, and the doctors theorized that the shock of being drained of blood, or maybe seeing his granddaughter as a vampire, had been too much for him. Who the hell knew? If you had a bad ticker, how the hell would you ever survive the horror fest that had befallen this family? The youngest daughter hadn't made it either. Her throat had been so small that the fangs had pierced too much and collapsed her windpipe. She'd suffocated before she could bleed out, so no vampirism for her.
Who did this to you, Edna?
I asked, and my voice was gentler than it had been. It was all just so awful.
Who did the voices belong to?
Damien asked.
The ones that promised you eternal youth. Who told you that?
He did.
Who is he? I asked.
He came with Katie. She brought him home. He found her when she was lost and he brought her back to us.
What was his name, this good Samaritan? I asked. She smiled at me.
Yes, he was a good Samaritan. He found Katie and brought her back to us. He told us that we could all be together forever and never grow old, never die. I remember his eyes.
She frowned.
Or I don't remember his eyes. I don't know if I remember what color his eyes were, but they were like stars.
We questioned her for a while longer, but all we learned was that the man had short dark hair, maybe black, maybe brown. He was Caucasian. He was young, but since she was in her early 70s, that could have meant anything from teens to 50s. His eyes had glowed like stars, which could have meant they were paler colored, gray or pale blue, or it could just have meant that she remembered them glowing, but not the color. Edna's son, Katie's father, remembered even less. His memory seemed to stop with Katie at the door. She'd come home. She wasn't dead. That's where he stopped. It was more merciful than what Edna remembered. In the hallway, Nolan asked, "Will they remember more as time passes?"
"Yes," Damien said.
"Yes," Echo said.
"Why do neither of you sound happy about that?" I asked.
"Would you want to remember any of this?"
Echo asked. I looked into her lovely blue eyes and said,
"Hell no."
"Some people don't ever remember their first night,"
Fortune said.
"Maybe they won't either."
"Edna Brady already remembers most of it."
"The man doesn't? The best chance we have of finding the vampire that is doing this is to start with the teenage girls. One of them was the first victim. She'll remember the most about the one that created her,"
Echo said.
"They found Sinead Royce's family,"
Superintendent Pearson said. He'd come in late and mostly just monitored us. He didn't want to see either of the victims in person. He was having a lot of trouble coping with them as vampires when he'd seen them alive and looking for their daughter just days ago. "Your face says it's not good news," I said. He shook his head.
"The whole family was so brutally attacked that none of them rose as vampires."
"How can you be sure?"
Echo asked.
"They're starting to rot."
"Where were the bodies found?"
Edward asked.
"In a shed 3 houses over. The smell alerted the neighbors."
"Where were the owners of the house?" I asked.
"In the shed," he said.
"I take it that they won't be rising as vamps either."
"No."
"Is this the most victims that were torn up too badly to rise as the undead?"
Echo asked.
"That we found, yes."
"Maybe it's a clue," I said.
"A clue to what?" Edward asked.
"I have no fucking idea, but it's something different in the pattern, and different is something."
"Do you want to go look at the shed?"
he asked.
"No,"
he smiled.
"Want to go look for clues in a shed that was full of decomposing bodies?"
"When you put it that way, how can I resist?" Chapter 59. We never got to investigate the shed. Some of the neighbors decided that it must be evil or full of some disease that was ravaging their town, so they set it on fire. We got to watch the fire department do its job, but that didn't help us find a clue to what or who was spreading vampirism like a summer cold through Dublin. In fact, everywhere we went that night, there were no clues, only more victims. Either the victims that the newly risen had attacked, or the new vampires themselves who weren't much better at being vampires than Edna and Michael Brady. One thing was different about almost all of the newly risen, though. Once they took blood, they stopped being dangerous. They couldn't always remember anything, but they were more coherent than any newbie vampires I'd ever met. They also looked more normally human. "What bloodline is this?" I asked Echo and Fortune.
"I do not know,"
Echo said, and Fortune just shook her head. Kazim and Jake didn't know either. Since between the four of them they'd seen thousands of years of vampires, we were well and truly clueless. Eventually we got sent back to our hotel for sleep and food, but I was too tired to eat. The jet lag had finally caught up with me in a major way. As Nikki opened the door, I leaned beside it and stared at the opposite wall as Domino and Ethan opened the door next door. Magda and Giacomo were on the other side of them. They'd left the three vampires at Nolan's compound with its one working cell. Magda made a comment about the three new vamps tearing up the cell they were in the way she had done to the other one.
They have not the will nor the training yet. The cell will be sufficient for the newly risen who are untrained in combat.
I thought that was interesting wording, and texted Edward to tell Nolan that they might need special accommodations for any vamps who had military, martial arts, or other physically trained backgrounds. He was staying at the compound with Nolan. Apparently there were living quarters there, though Magda said calling them apartments would be too much. They were more like barracks. Since I'd never been in the real military before, I didn't actually understand the difference, but I was too tired to ask for an explanation. No, I was so tired I didn't care what the explanation was. That was the truth. Fortune and Echo were beside us on this side of the hallway. Socrates had decided to stay at Nolan's in the barracks to continue to foster goodwill and to learn as much as he could about what their plans were for the paramilitary group. That left Pride in a room by himself or sharing with Dev. Jake and Kazim were bunkmates, but somehow if Socrates had been there, we'd have been short a bed. Nikki had bunked next door with Pride for the nap earlier, but I didn't want to give up Nikki for the whole trip. I just didn't. I was in love with him, and other than Nathaniel, that wasn't true of anyone else on the trip with me. I liked some of my people very much and was wildly attracted to others, but it wasn't in love. This tired after the night we'd just had, being held by people you truly loved sounded just about perfect. My phone rang as Nikki got the door opened. It was Jean-Claude's ringtone, so I answered as Nikki held the door for me. Hey, tall, pale, and handsome, what's up?
Ma petite, I will soon be down for the day.
The time difference is going to take some getting used to, I said as I sat on the edge of the king-size bed.
Yes, but I cannot take the ardeur for you while I sleep. You may wake for the morning before I do, and if so, then you will need to feed the ardeur when you wake. You must also eat a real breakfast, not just coffee. I need you to take care of your physical needs, so that me being unable to take your other hunger will not get out of hand for you.
Crap, I said, and the wave of tiredness washed over me.
Ma petite, what is wrong?
I didn't try to explain, just thought about the last few hours. He got the shorthand version, all the awful in a fraction of the time. His comment was,
That is truly terrible, ma petite. I am so sorry that you are having to deal with such things.
It's my job, I said.
Actually, it is not, but I understand that you feel that way.
Opening to him enough to share the memories let me know that he was alone in the bedroom, sitting on the edge of the bed as I was. Has Richard gone back home?
Oui. Jason has arrived from New York.
Tell him hi for me and give him a hug. I miss him.
As do I, ma petite. If you are still away by the next weekend, his JJ will be joining him here in St. Louis for a few days.
I thought about the blonde ballerina who had finally won Jason's heart. They were very warm thoughts on my part. She was probably my favorite female lover after Echo. I wasn't sure why Fortune and Magda were third and fourth on that list, respectively, but I could honor the truth of it without overanalyzing it. Fortune was committed to Echo and liked men a lot. Magda seemed content to treat all of us as fuck buddies. Have fun, I said.
I hope that you are home by then, ma petite.
Me too. Hey, ask him if I am home next weekend. Could he and JJ stay over anyway?
I will happily do so, he said.
I smiled. That would be great.
I have spoken with Micah on the phone about the Rowan and their plight with she who must not be named.
Edward's calling her that too. I'd really prefer not to mix Harry Potter with this awfulness.
As you like, ma petite. Micah will be speaking with Raphael at more length since they are both still on the West Coast trying to prevent a shapeshifter war.
I'd have thought the negotiations would be done by now, or they'd have picked who to fight and kicked their asses.
I do not have all the details, but it seems more complex than first explained.
I thought about calling Micah, but it seemed too complicated, especially if I still had to feed the ardeur. Why was I this discouraged? Was it the jet lag? Edna Brady's screams? The fact that two entire families had been wiped out by this new vampire? Or the thought that something we had done to the Mother of All Darkness had weakened Damien's old master enough to allow the new vampires to get a foothold here in Dublin. I kept coming back to that. Somehow this was our fault for not taking charge of things. We'd just wanted to run America and trust the rest of the world's vampires to take care of business. I was beginning to realize how naive that may have been.
Ma petite, this is not our doing. Do not take on the guilt of it.
Was I thinking that out loud?
Yes,
Nathaniel said, as he went into the bathroom and closed the door. I realized that Nikki, Dev, and Damien were all in the room. There was no way that all of us were going to be able to sleep in one king-size bed.
They are a bounty, ma petite, not a burden. Please remember that.
I will, but thanks for the reminder.
Time is growing short here, ma petite. I must sleep, and the demon we share must come home to you.
The Ardure isn't a real demon, Jean-Claude. It isn't even evil, just occasionally inconvenient.
It is still the power that has earned me the title of incubus, and you that of succubus.
Fine, but I've dealt with real demons, Jean-Claude, and it's a whole new level of bad.
That I believe, ma petite, but dawn is almost upon me. Are you prepared for the Ardure to be returned?
You fed it well today, right?
Oui.
Then it shouldn't need feeding again that soon. I can control it better than that now.
Tonight, yes, but I can feel that you have donated too much blood and not eaten enough real food, plus the jet lag and the stress of your job.
You underestimate how much energy it all takes.
I promise that I will eat breakfast tomorrow morning, and I will feed the Ardure without it forcing me to feed it.
Thank you, ma petite.
You're welcome. I'm just exhausted. We're all tired. The four men looked at one another and then at me.
You just need to pick your bedmates so we can all get some sleep,
Nathaniel said, smiling.
Ma petite, they are all handsome, all good lovers, and you are in love with two of them. Do not allow the ugliness of the night to paint this moment as anything less than beautiful.
I sighed and knew he was right. I really did. My therapist would have agreed with him, but I was still exhausted and discouraged, and I felt vaguely like everything going wrong was my fault somehow. So why did I deserve such happiness after what had happened to the Bradys and the Royces?
It is not an exchange of blessings, ma petite, not an either-or. You did not create the vampire who is haunting Dublin, nor did you cause the families to fall into his clutches.
I'm beginning to believe that something about killing the Mother of All Darkness weakened Damien's old master and gave this new monster an opening here in Ireland.
If that is true, then we will deal with it. We will fix any problems we have inadvertently created, but we will not take the guilt of it to heart. That we will not do, and you must not. You are the queen. It is your choice whether you are going to be a queen of joy or sorrow. I have been ruled by both, and I much prefer joy.
So do I said.
Then prove it to me. To yourself, to the men in the room with you, or to the women next door to you. You have many blessings with you. Please. Please, ma petite, treat them and yourself as such.
I will try, I said. I could almost feel him smile, not through vampire powers, but just knowing him, knowing us.
Thank you, ma petite. That is all I can ask. Now I must get to bed. Jason will be out of the bathroom in time to tuck us both in for the day.
Have fun, I said.
He is not bisexual enough for much fun, nor do we have time before sunrise.
Just enjoy having Jason home for cuddles and blood, then, I said.
That I will do. Je t'aime, ma petite.
I love you, too. Chapter 60 I woke, curled between the warmth of Nathaniel and the cooling skin of Damien. The vampire was dead to the world, but there'd been no more nightmares. Something about all three of us touching kept the wicked bitch out of all our dreams, and us out of hers. It had been what made me choose Damien to be on the other side of me from Nathaniel, but the vampire had grown cool overnight and woken me. I was about to marry Jean-Claude, and I wasn't sure I'd ever be able to sleep comfortably beside him or any vampire. The thought slid into the down mood that I'd gone to sleep with, and that was apparently still with me. Nathaniel made small protesting noises and snuggled closer to me. He was almost fever warm. Damien was growing cold on the other side of me, but worse than that, he felt dead. He had that loose, heavy feel to him that only dead bodies had. I moved away from him, but his body slid into the space so that he was still touching me. So still. So dead. I started to get out from between them, but Nathaniel turned and wrapped his arms around me, trapping me between the two of them, pressing me more in against Damien's cold body. Not icy cold, but that bloodless, lifeless... My heart was speeding up. My pulse started to beat in my throat so that it felt like I was choking. I had to get out of this bed and away from the vampire. I pushed against Nathaniel's arm, trying to get him to let go enough so that I could get up, but he did what he normally did. The more I struggled, the tighter he held on, making little protesting noises about warm and sleepy and no getting up. Normally it was cute, but not today. Nathaniel, let go!
Warm, he muttered,
snuggling so tightly against me that I couldn't move. But me struggling to get away had made Damien's body slide heavier against me, so that he was literally dead weight trapping me in the sheets. It threw me back to waking in a coffin with a vampire who planned on making me her servant when she rose for the night. I felt the bubbling weight of a scream. The fear was choking thick. There was a knock on the door and I screamed, a small yip of a scream, but a scream. It startled Nathaniel enough that he let me go and rose to look at me.
What's wrong?
It's Nikki, Anita. Open the door now!
He was picking up my fear. I'm okay, Nikki. I'm just spooked.
Let me in the room or we'll be paying for a door.
We're getting up,
Nathaniel called, but he was looking at me. He whispered,
What's wrong?
I shook my head and slid out of the bed. I was opening the door buck naked when I realized there might be more people than just Nikki in the hallway. I was scared enough that I wasn't thinking clearly. What the hell was wrong with me? I need a robe, I said, moving back so that no one could see me at the door. I started to close it, but a hand stopped the door.
Everyone out here has seen you naked, Nikki said.
Dev said,
We have breakfast.
And coffee, Domino said.
Hell, why didn't you say so?
I tried for light, but it wasn't real. I was still scared as if we'd had another nightmare, but I didn't remember dreaming anything last night. I stepped back and let them into the room, using the door for my modesty at least until the men had trooped inside. Then I had to close the door, and modesty wasn't actually possible. Ethan managed not to stare at me at all, but he was the only one of the four men who managed it. Domino stared, but managed not to ogle me. He was carrying the coffee, so I was all right with being stared at. Dev was cheerfully lecherous about it. His hands were full of trays of food. Nikki had more food in his hands, but he wasn't cheerful about it. He gave me a look that was so intense it stripped his feelings as naked as my body. It made me go to him and try for a good morning kiss, but his hands were too full, and I was too short. Nathaniel got out of bed to help set up the food. Dev leered as cheerfully at Nathaniel as he had at me. They grinned at each other. I shook my head and rolled my eyes at them both. I grabbed the hotel robe that was on the back of the bathroom door for our use while the men set up breakfast on any flat surface they could find.
Boo on the robe, Dev said. I wanted to leer at you both while we ate breakfast.
Nothing personally to Nathaniel, but he can get dressed as far as I'm concerned, Domino said, smiling.
Nathaniel stuck his tongue out at him as he walked past them all for the bathroom. We had just woken up, but there were some things that I still didn't like to do as a couple, and one of them was bathroom stuff. I still preferred that to be private. I was pretty sure I always would.
Where is everybody else? I asked.
Eating in the other rooms. There wasn't room for all of us to eat room service in any one room, Domino said.
Did you have more bad dreams? Ethan asked.
You felt me be all scaredy cat too?
I don't pick up your emotions as strongly as Nikki does or some of the other men, but I felt it this morning.
No bad dreams. All of us sleeping together took care of it, but I just can't wake up beside one of my lovers feeling that much like a real corpse. I looked at Damien, who had collapsed into a still heap of paper-white skin and crimson hair.
You flash back on waking up in the coffin with the one vampire?
Nikki asked. I nodded, shivering even in the thick white robe. Domino held out coffee to me. It made me smile.
Thanks.
He took his own coffee and let the others get their own. They'd wait on me, but not on one another, at least not outside of helping Nathaniel in the kitchen. But that was more family chores, not small romantic gestures. Bringing me coffee in the morning definitely got you a brownie point in my book. My phone sounded with Edward's ringtone. I hurried, glad the coffee had a lid, as I went for my phone, which was still plugged into the wall. Hey, Edward, what's up?
Rourke broke out of jail last night.
How?
No one knows. He was just gone this morning.
So he didn't break out, he walked out, I said.
Security footage showed him mind-fucking one of the guards. Nothing in the research says that Selkies can do that.
They can't, but I know that some animals to call, and some human servants of a powerful enough vampire can capture someone with their gaze just like a vampire, I said. He lowered his voice.
Speaking from experience?
Yeah.
I'll tell the local guards and the Gerda, he said.
I didn't know that Rourke could use his gaze like that, or I'd have warned someone. It's a really rare ability in an animal to call.
I'll make sure they know that, he said.
Is there anything we can do to help? Do you need us at the jail?
Do you know how to track a Selkie? I guess Rowan, here.
I don't have any seal lycanthropy in me or in anyone with me. It's not even lycanthropy, it's just what they are.
They've got a bolo out on Rourke with his picture to every Gerda in the area. If he's still in Dublin, maybe someone will see him and report it.
You don't sound too optimistic.
He mind-fucked personnel here at the jail like a master vampire, Anita. The wicked bitch didn't make him do all that without a plan to keep him hidden from us. She'll keep him close to her now.
That's what you would do, I said. But you're not crazy. She might do things differently.
She might, but crazy doesn't always mean stupid or even careless.
No arguments, I said and sipped my coffee. It was just like I preferred it, which meant Nikki had ordered it, no matter who had carried it in the door. So what do you want us to do today?
Come to the station ASAP. You were helpful enough last night that they're willing to let you see more of the evidence, finally.
Yay! I didn't sound truly enthusiastic.
Are you okay?
I woke spooked. Something about dealing with the family members last night tanked my mood, and I just can't seem to let it go.
It was bad, Anita. You and I don't usually have to deal with the victims except to avenge them.
I hate thinking of the vampires who kill people as victims, I said.
Me too. It makes our job back in the States harder.
Yeah, I said, and again there was that melancholy.
You need more sunlight if you can get it today. It'll help with the jet lag and time change adjustment. How soon can you get here? I want us to have a strategy by the time the vampires rise for the night.
Were there more deaths last night?
Yes.
I sighed. I can be there in 20 minutes.
No, Nikki said. You need to eat first.
I frowned at him. I've been informed that I have to eat breakfast. Jean-Claude made me promise that I'd eat solid food and not just coffee before I went vampire hunting today.
Sounds like Donna.
They worry about us, I said. He gave a small laugh.
Yeah, they do.
Why is that funny?
You and me with domestic lives.
I laughed and sipped my coffee.
Yeah, we were both such loners when we met. Now look at us. I'm about to be married with children, and you have more domestic partners and fiancés than most old-school Mormons.
I'm not a polygamist, Edward.
Oh, really?
I'm into polyandry, not polygamy.
Polyandry means multiple men, I know, but I've met the three women you're traveling with, and I think they put plenty of igamy into your andry.
I laughed, and some of the tightness in my heart eased.
Thanks for that.
I'll see you soon. Nathaniel said,
You also promised Jean-Claude that you'd feed the Ardeur before you went out today.
Let's eat and get dressed and see how long that takes, I said. I looked at Damien. We have to dress him, too, before he goes in the duffel bag to carry for the day.
Dressing a dead body is a lot harder than it sounds,
Domino said.
It's not that hard,
Nikki said. I looked from one to the other of them. Nathaniel said,
You aren't talking about dressing vampires, are you?
They looked at each other, then back at us, and said in unison,
No.
Then the two of you get to dress Damien while Nathaniel and I dress ourselves.
I'll let the others know that we'll be moving out sooner than we planned,
Ethan said. Tell them that Rourke escaped and how, I said. Ethan nodded.
Of course.
He went out and left us to dress and get ready for a day of crime fighting. I was really glad that Nikki and Domino were going to be dressing the vampire. I didn't want to touch him right now. The thought of it made my skin creep. Some big, tough vampire slayer I turned out to be.
You really should feed the Ardeur before we leave the room,
Nikki said. Domino and he were laying Damien out on his back on the bed. It was the way you laid a corpse before you bagged it. I shook my head. I promise to feed later, but right now let's see if we can catch some bad guys. They stopped trying to argue with me. One of the good things about them all being able to feel varying degrees of what I was truly feeling and thinking was that they knew when I was done. As I watched them start to dress the corpse in my bed, I was done. Fortune would be packing Echo into the big duffel bag, too. It was like body disposal, except we kept the bodies. Chapter 61. Someone who knew more about jet lag than I did put us in a room with a window. Apparently, as much sunlight as possible, even the second day you land in a different time zone, helped you not get so much lag in your jet-set lifestyle. Natural sunlight on your skin outside was better, but we'd take what we could get while we looked at the crime scene photos. Nathaniel, Dev, Fortune, Pride, Donnie, and Griffin all went out to sightsee in the sunshine. Nathaniel kissed me goodbye, and I wrapped the feel of him around me like you'd wrap your favorite robe, a comfort object that just happened to be the man I loved. As we drew apart, Dev stepped up and said, "Me next." I frowned at him because it was sort of presumptuous, and we were in the hallway with police persons watching. I tried not to be too kissy face at work because it played hell with your reputation. It wasn't the brilliant smile that made me not be cranky. It was the uncertainty in his eyes that let me know he wasn't sure of his welcome. The handsome, confident Mephistopheles wouldn't have gotten cuddles from me in front of the other officers, but the less confident Dev got more play with me. He wrapped one arm around me and the other around Nathaniel. I had a moment of hugging them both, and it was good, but I suddenly missed Micah. It was like a wave of homesickness for the feel of him in our arms. I tried wrapping my arms around both of the men with me, but when I tried to cuddle between them, my spot on Nathaniel's chest didn't have the curve of Micah's neck on the other side of me. Dev was so tall that my face was pressed even lower on his chest than on Nathaniel's, so that I could hear the thick beat of his heart against my ear. Sometimes when Jean-Claude was in high enough boots, I could rest my head over his heart, but the vampire's heart didn't always beat, so I wasn't used to this thick, constant beat against my ear. It was both reassuring and unnerving because I wasn't accustomed to it. Nathaniel stepped back so that Dev could wrap his arms around just me. It left me cuddled against his chest with the sound of his heartbeat thick and sure against my ear. He touched my hair with his fingers, which made me raise my head so I could look up all that tall, broad upper body to meet his eyes. He was watching me, watching him, and I realized that I'd taken too long. I should have offered a kiss and let him go off with Nathaniel for their sightseeing. Now it had gone on too long, and the sounds around us were growing quiet as the police and other personnel were slowly stopping what they were doing to watch. I didn't look around to see if I was right or if I was just being self-conscious, because I'd learned that if people were watching you, you didn't want to make eye contact, and if they weren't watching, you felt silly for looking.
"What are you thinking?"
he asked softly. "That I can never decide what color your eyes are." He smiled and said,
"My driver's license says blue."
"So does Nathaniel's, but his really aren't blue," I said, smiling back.
"I like that you think about my eyes that much."
I didn't tell him that it was partly because the rest of him puzzled me almost as much as his eyes. I hugged him more tightly around the waist, pressing our bodies even closer together. Close enough that I could feel that he was beginning to be happy to be there, which meant I needed to kiss him and send him on his way before he got to the point where walking was uncomfortable without adjusting things. I moved minutely so we had a little more room so that I could go up on tiptoe and he could bend down. He brought his hand up to cradle one side of my face while his other arm stayed behind me to steady me as I rose to meet his lips. The kiss was soft, but with more lips moving than that sounds like. A tender kiss with just an edge of tongue like a promise for later. Things low in my body responded to him so that I was breathless when he broke the kiss and pulled back to look into my eyes. If I'd been a man, Devereaux wouldn't have been the only one who needed to adjust things before we walked away. "Wow," I said softly. His smile, his eyes, his whole face was shining with happiness. He liked that he'd gotten that much reaction from me. Part of me was happy, and part of me was confused. I kept thinking I knew how many people I had in my life, how many I wanted in my life, and how many were occasional fun and food. And then one of them would do something like this, and I'd want more than just fun and games. Damn it. Nathaniel took him by the arm and pulled him away.
"We'll do more kissing later. I want to see Ireland."
Dev laughed and let himself be pulled away. I saw Detective Sheridan watching us and knew that there'd be no misunderstandings now about her attraction to this particular tall blonde man. Good. Fortune came up to me smiling and shaking her head.
"I can't follow that. Let's just shake."
She meant it, but she had also come up to get her kiss. She was one of the women in our life and in our beds, so I rolled my eyes at her but offered her a kiss. I had to go up on tiptoe for her like I did the men, but our kiss was light and not serious by comparison. Fortune's heart belonged to Echo, whom she was leaving in my care while she saw Dublin for the first time and helped guard the others. But she had asked for a kiss goodbye, which meant the acknowledgement of the relationship mattered to her. Sometimes it's not about romance. It's about belonging. About knowing that someone cares for you enough to kiss you in public and say, "This is mine." Or at least, I'm thinking of making it mine. Acknowledgement was important to Fortune and to Dev, to Devereaux. Wasn't it weird that I liked him better with that name attached to him? Dev seemed unfinished, like a nickname for something longer. And since it was short for Devil, which I was never going to cry out in a moment of passion, Devereaux made me happier. Maybe Shakespeare had been wrong, and a rose by any other name wouldn't be as sweet? I was actually sad to see Nathaniel and Dev go without me. It would have been nice to go out holding hands and being all romantic tourist with them. But I had a job to do, so I joined Edward in the room where we'd look for clues. Nikki helped me place Echo and Damien in their light-proof bags at the sides of my chair, and then he went out into the hallway with Domino, Kazim, and Jake to be good bodyguards. Socrates and Ethan had stayed with Magda at headquarters. Socrates thought it would be a good idea to show some of Nolan's people the speed of a regular lycanthrope. He and Ethan were good, but they were slower than Magda because they weren't one of the Harlequin, and who were sleeping with me and Jean-Claude. Though they were going to leave that part out and just say it was age and practice that made her even faster than them. Flannery got to wait out in the hallway with my guards because he was there to partner, or back up, or even keep an eye on his boss. Nolan got to join us in the room this time. Whoever had his back was pushing hard that he get involved in things. Pearson and Sheridan didn't like it, but they took it like the professionals they were, when the top brass above you force people into your investigation. We settled down with pictures of horrors spread on the table, a fresh map of Dublin on the corkboard, and people bringing in actual paper for us since I didn't have an iPad or a computer with me to read things on screen. My iPhone was good for a lot of things, but reading detailed forensics wasn't one of them. I looked at the first victim with their throat torn open and thought, I really don't want to be here. I wanted to be out in the sunshine with Nathaniel and Dev and Fortune and even Donnie and Griffin. They both seemed pleasant and would probably be good tour guides for the city. I promised myself that I would get a few days of vacation in here with my people before we flew home. I would, damn it, but first we had a mystery to solve. Why were vampires spreading through Dublin for the first time in their history? Why was the fairy magic of the city's land fading? Why wasn't Damien's old master policing the new vampires or destroying them? Had she really lost that much power, and had she lost it because we'd killed the mother of all darkness? How did we find the vampire who had started all this in the city if it wasn't Milady? How did we find the vampire that seemed to be enjoying tearing people's throats out? How did we keep more of the families of Dublin from joining the Brady family as the new undead? We had so many questions. What we needed was answers, and that was why I didn't get to play tourist. If we solved the mystery, caught all the bad guys and girls, and saved Ireland from its first ever plague of vampires, then I could be a tourist. Until then, it had to be all business for me, because if I didn't do my job, more people would die. Was it weird that I still thought of the Brady family as having died, even though they were vampires now? I was in love, and engaged to Jean-Claude. But looking down at the new vampires in the children's room today, I'd still thought dead, murdered, not undead and alive. Even when your murder victims can come back to life at sunset, it doesn't always change the fact that they had their lives taken from them. Being made a vampire against your will was still murder in the United States. It'd be interesting to see how Irish law handled it. It takes a while to get used to the thought that your victim can give testimony in their own murder trial. It would be up to Irish courts and politicians to decide if being turned against your will was considered murder here. All I knew was that back home, Edward and I would have had warrants of execution on the asses of every vampire involved in this. As I looked at the photos of fang marks, torn throats, and a few bodies just torn apart, killing whoever had done this totally worked for me. Chapter 62. Hours later, we had the map covered in crime scenes and locations. Sheridan had stayed to help us color-code everything, though I was certain they had a map somewhere that had all of this already marked. I'd actually asked, Aren't we duplicating something you've got in your murder room?
We don't call it that,
she'd said. Sorry, but whatever you call it, haven't you done this already?
They want to see if you find a pattern they've missed, Edward said. If they give you their map, then you'll be looking at what they think is important.
I gave him the look that deserved.
We're wasting time duplicating effort. No, truly, Marshal Blake. We want your opinion without our bias.
I'd let it go, but I didn't buy it. I was pretty sure they just didn't want me to see all their evidence, just in case I turned out to be an evil necromancer after all.